Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
That's what I think is important is this, is that win, lose, or draw, those are some moments that we're all together where you're able to you know, it's there's great conversations in there about off the field stuff, but then there's also the X's and O's part. Hey, you remember this play? What'd you think about this? And we're all watching. We got our film on the plane, so we're all watching it. Some guys do. Some guys read books. Some guys sleep. It's your own prerogative, but it's really good. It's healthy, and I like it, and it just really sets the tone for going into the next week of where you're at.
Bears head coach Matt Nagy, head coach of the 5-1 Bears, second best record in the NFC Bears. Joe Ostrowski here till 8 o'clock, Sports Radio 670, The Score, and at 8 o'clock, going to start doing something special. 8 o'clock on Wednesdays. So get ready for it. Bears replay. So we're going to have the Bears-Panthers game. Jeff and Tom on the call. Coming up at 8 o'clock every single Wednesday. So from 8 to 11 or so, I'm sure it'll bleed a little bit later. We're going to replay the most recent Bears game right here on Sports Radio 670, The Score. So that kicks off this evening at 8 o'clock on The Score. And speaking of what we'll be broadcasting on The Score, tomorrow morning, Stan Bowman will talk about what is happening with the Blackhawks organization. 8:20 on the Mullion Haas Show. And I heard it was talked about on the Danny Parkin Show. I can confirm that I did receive the same email from our head honcho, Mitch Rosen, and it did say Stan Bowman. But I'm pretty sure it's Stan Bowman, but it didn't say Stan. 8:20 tomorrow morning. So set your alarm. Make sure you're here if you are a Blackhawks fan in any form. Maybe we'll get some answers about the direction of the organization. Open phone lines, 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. That's how you can call, and that's how you can text executive producer Mike Rankin here. I'm going to get to some college football. Big Ten's here. Illinois is going to play for real on Friday night, whether you're ready for it or not. I have a lot of questions whether they're going to fit the season or even play the majority of the games. I don't see any way they're going to play all the games. Just pay attention what's happening with the postponements in all of college football. It's not just one conference. It's a lot of different conferences. See multiple games getting postponed in some conferences. So there are no bye weeks built in, no wiggle room to work with in the conference. So of course they're going to end up being forced to cancel some games. Like, there's probably going to be teams that play six games. And the protocols are extremely stringent. If you test positive, you're gone a month. So the Big Ten is handling it different than you see in some of the other conferences, namely the SEC. But just hearing Matt Nagy's voice, I was thinking about something that, and this is what we do with the Monday morning quarterbacking. And this next week, it's going to be Tuesday morning since they're playing on Monday night. But it's easy to pick apart and look at everything that they're not doing. What are Nagy's issues? And I do it as well. I have an issue with some of his late game play calling. Until he gets the opportunity to prove me wrong, I have a problem with how he's called games in the biggest moments in his career. We can go back to his last season with the Chiefs in that postseason game against the Titans and what happened in the second half there. When in his one opportunity in a playoff game with the Bears against the Eagles, what's going on? We've been talking for multiple years now about all the issues on offense. Game management in the most important moments of the game. Why aren't you running the ball? Why aren't you bleeding the clock? Why aren't you paying attention to what Mike Vrabel's doing in Tennessee? And he'll be coaching against Tennessee coming up in a bit here. But sometimes we have to check ourselves. We are so hyper-focused on everything going on with the Bears that we need to take a look, take a step back and look around at what's happening elsewhere in the league to see where they stand. Are they an elite team? No. No, there are some national pundits that are putting the Bears in the top eight. I've seen as high as top six right now just because of their record and the way they're winning games. I think that's an overreaction to what we've seen in the first 6 weeks, but the Bears will have an opportunity to prove that they do belong in the top eight, top 10 in the next few weeks if they aren't there. I mean, some people are putting them in top 10, some aren't. Okay? But as far as Nagy and our criticisms of him, it could be much worse. It was pretty interesting that yesterday morning, a report from ESPN came out that executives around the league are talking about the Bears, and they're saying Matt Nagy is safe. I think he is too. And he's under contract for two more years, and the guy has a great winning percentage, and that's the bottom line. It's the bottom line business in the NFL. Are you winning football games? Matt Nagy's winning football games. Now, I can't label him as a great coach because he hasn't won any playoff games yet. He will likely get that opportunity this season. But it could be so much worse. We've experienced so much worse with John Fox and Mark Trussman after year one. We've been there. We've been there. Love Wani, but it got really ugly at the end. So ugly, my dad canceled season tickets. And I'm looking at some of the other teams already. You know, just over a month in the season, we already have two firings and we're waiting on what's next. There's a group of head coaches that are clearly a tier or two below Matt Nagy, and it's not close. Two have already been fired in Quinn and O'Brien, and I can't argue against those moves. In fact, right after those moves, what happened? Both of those teams won ball games. It feels like there was a bit of a spark, and you see that from time to time with certain teams. Now, the other firings that are coming up next, we'll see. It's not going to end with those two guys this season, no question. But there's a group of bottom 10 that are clearly multiple levels below Matt Nagy that cannot lead a team like he can. I was just talking about that with Pat Finley of the Sun-Times. It looks like he's a good head coach. Now let's see in the playoffs. Maybe we can say, great, make a playoff run, and we could talk about it. Start scoring some points on a regular basis with your players year three of being here, and we could talk about that. Not yet. Not yet right now. But the players are still bought in. The message is not wearing off. That's big. And they bought in year one, too. And in year three, they're still buying in. According to everybody that we talk to. So that's big. He can lead the team. And what, 66, 67% of the time the Bears are winning with him as the head coach? So what's the problem? I'm just saying sometimes we have to check ourselves. Take a step back. Houston, Atlanta, much worse. Zach Taylor in Cincinnati, I don't know if he can coach. He might end up winning some games because Joe Burrow's his quarterback down the line, but I don't know if the guy can coach. Give me Nagy over Fangio. Nice win, Vic. You didn't even get into the end zone. You won a game in New England. I think that's more about the Patriots. Adam Gase will be fired soon. If not, this year is going to happen right after the season. I would keep them hired so they keep losing as many games as possible. Go 0-16 so you can land Trevor Lawrence. Matt Patricia should be fired in Detroit. He should be launched at the end of the season. Anthony Lynn. You know, I think starting the season with Tyrod Taylor as the quarterback is a fireable offense after what we've seen. Now you have the rookie out there only because of what? Because of an injury. Mike Zimmer. You want Mike Zimmer? How are things looking in the Vikings? And that's a defensive-minded guy. Defensive-minded guy doesn't have a defense right now. Nobody in the secondary. Like, all of these names we're talking about are in that bottom 10, and Nagy's not even close. But he's also not top 12. Just looking at longevity, of course, you're not going to put him with some of the names that have made long runs in the postseason. Your Belichick, your Peyton, your even Tomlin, even though at times his team doesn't show up. He's got the experience, and it still seems like the players are buying in. Now, they've had to make some changes over the years, but look up right now, and they're undefeated. Harbaugh is a very good coach. Carroll, of course, Reed, Peterson, he has a ring, so you have to put him ahead. Kyle Shanahan, some rough outings and big moments, but you would take him over Matt Nagy. McVay, Vrabel now. I think Frank Reich is in that conversation. Arians as well. That's 12 right there. And then Nagy's with the other group. He's in that mid-range. And that's okay. Because he hasn't had an opportunity outside the one game to win in the playoffs. He's got to do that this year. It's not only making the playoffs, bouncing back from an 8-8 season. I think it's winning a game. Because the format has also expanded, too. You have to keep that in mind. So I would hesitate when we talk about some of these other names. If you want to put McDermott in there, that's okay with Buffalo. That's okay. But he's on par with the rest, right? I like what LaFleur's done. They made a deep run in the postseason last year. Let's see how the Packers respond to their first loss of the year. They're scoring points, but their defense has issues too. That's the thing with the NFC. There's so many teams that are strong on one side of the ball, and their big weakness is on the opposite side. Same thing with Seattle. They're undefeated still, but they don't have a defense. They have Russell Wilson. I like what's happening in Cleveland with Stefanski. Long term, I don't know if he can be a coach. Nagy's ahead of him because he's had more time. Matt Rhule. Culture changing immediately in Carolina. I think he's going to be a good coach, but right now, you'd probably put him close to Nagy or maybe a few slots behind him. Flores, what they're developing in Miami, love it. Made the right move at quarterback. It's Tua time. That was clearly always going to be the move. But after the bye week, Tagovailoa is going to be our guy moving forward. Don't care what the record is. Don't care that we're one game back in the AFC East. There's Rivera and Gruden, guys that have been there a long time. But Matt Nagy's in that tier. He's not top 12, but he's around the middle of the league with a lot of room to grow. And I still think he's learning on the job. He's still learning how to be a head coach in this league. He's probably still learning how to be a play caller because he only did it for a half a season before becoming the head coach / play caller of your Bears. So it could be much worse. That's the reminder here, that he's average to above average, and that's okay. You can win being that, and he's going to have, I think, multiple years to prove that he's better than average to above average. Executive producer Mike Rankin, do you disagree with anything I have to say about that? As far as Nagy is and what kind of a group he is in the middle of year three. And I think we're going to learn more by the end of the season. That'll be fascinating because if they have another double-digit win season, 2 and 3 years, you might move them up the ranks. You have to win in the postseason. Or they could tank and they could be 500 two consecutive years and we would then be downgrading Matt.
Yeah, I am on board with a lot of what you're saying, to be honest with you. I think we have to remember to be fair when we're criticizing and evaluating Matt Nagy's tenure with the Bears. He came in, adopted a quarterback that, you know, wasn't a part of the drafting process, and that's a huge part of it, right? It's influenced a lot of his tenure to this point. However, he also came into a very favorable situation with the personnel, the players, and I think that's benefited him. One thing that I wholeheartedly agree with is that he commands a locker room. Those players play very hard for him. Players coach, and the success is translated on the field. The effort, even in a season in which, you know, they went 500 and it was disappointing, those guys went out and played and they backed the head coach constantly. So that's what I'm looking for in a Chicago Bears head coach. Number one is for players to play hard for this man, and that's been consistent. The gripe that I have with Matt Nagy is how stubborn he can be with certain situations, and he's not necessarily transparent as to why he continues to do the things that we continue to criticize him about. So, you know, those are my gripes, but it could be a lot worse. You're absolutely right there.
It could. And, Mike, I don't know if you're aware of this, but when it comes to our Bears, I am one of the most positive people that you're going to run into in social media. I don't know if you know this.
Yes, yes. I am very well aware of your love and support of the man making the personnel decisions in the GM's office.
You know, I'm probably throwing people for a loop if they've listened over the last couple of nights because I've been fairly positive. But I think that's how you have to be. You have to give them credit. You can't just bring the hammer. There's a lot to be positive right now. That could change in a month. That could absolutely flip the way they've won some of these games. But you have to give them their just due. Nobody thought they would be sitting here at 5-1 at this juncture. I thought I actually did make the case for them to win the NFC North, and the schedule was set up for them to get off to a fast start. But I didn't think 5-1, man.
I tell you, when this team, like, at first I was like, yeah, they won the first few weeks of the season when they were able to edge out the Giants on the last play. They came back. Boy, how about that win against Atlanta? Like, looking back at things, because you start stockpiling wins at the early part of the season, like, you take that for granted a little bit because all of a sudden you're 6 weeks in and look at where the Bears stand. So you can't dismiss the fact that they're like, they have one of the best percentages to make the playoffs among the NFL. I mean, they're the second best record in the NFC. So I think you take that, right, and we kind of look past the early start. But now as the season progresses, they're in a pretty good spot despite their flaws. And just real quick, going back on the Matt Nagy situation, I think I have such a hard time dealing with, okay, so what is it about Nagy? Why doesn't he want to run the football? Is it because of where the offensive line stands currently? Is it the schemes? I mean, they brought in multiple offensive line coaches. Now this is their second right under Nagy's tenure. What else are you going to tell me? Why aren't you running the football? If you're going to run the football.
I think he believes they can't.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm with you.
I think it's a little bit of everything. He believes they can't. He doesn't want to. I will say this, Mike, that if he wants to go the Patriots route that we've seen over the years, and if you want to use a short passing game with Foles as an extension of the run game, and that's going to be your run, I don't have any issue with that. That's fine, but don't stand up there all week and tell me how you're going to commit to the run and you need to be a balanced attack when you have no plan on being that.
Yeah, so the way I see it, I'm thinking the pass opens up the run game, which is sort of backwards in a sense, but I think you're right. They just can't do it because the schemes aren't right or the talent isn't there or something. That's where it is right now. They just can't.
That's my EP, Mike Rinkin. I'm Joe Ostrowski. You've got Sports Radio 670, The Score. Let's continue the NFL conversation. Next, we'll hear from Eric Eager of Pro Football Focus, and taking a look at just outside of Chicago as well and some of these other paper tigers in the National Football League, other ones. That's suggesting the Bears are one. We'll see. They'll have their opportunity to prove that they are not a paper tiger, but that's what people are calling them right now, despite their 5-1 record, and which will likely be a playoff appearance in 2020. Joe Osho, 670, The Score, and the Radio.com app.
Call me old-fashioned, you know, like literally, like I mean it. Call me old-fashioned. That's my new nickname.
No, A-Rob, you might be a top 10 guy, but I'm not going to call you old-fashioned. Joe Ostrowski here, Sports Radio 670, The Score. You may have heard me talk about my daily sports betting / sports show. It's sports betting. It's got that element to it, but it's a good old sports show. We do a lot of NFL, college football this time of year, and we talk some NFL with Eric Eager this morning from Pro Football Focus. He's one of my favorite regular guests that we have on that show. And you can listen live 9 to 11 a.m. on the radio.com app. Subscribe to the podcast, though. That's most important. Follow us on Twitter at BetSweats, at BetSweats. So the conversation with Eager started with all the controversy this week. People second-guessing coaches that decided to go for two, namely Ron Rivera against the Giants and what Romeo Crennel did in the Texans' loss to the Titans. Take a listen.
The time left really does matter, right? So there was about 35 seconds left. I think that's probably fine. You know, we actually had a coach who, you know, we were asking, like, why didn't you go for two, you know, at the end of the game? And he said, well, there was like 50 seconds left, and I knew that this other coach would sit on the ball in a tie game, and then the game would come down to a coin flip. And that's sort of an interesting sentiment, right? Because, like, you know, the Giants, in theory, with 30 seconds left and a few timeouts, if they're down by one, all they need is a field goal. And, you know, for some defenses, that's not a great proposition. And And so I think that the less time that's left, the better for the 2-point decision. I think the more of an underdog you are, the better decision. So for Washington, I think it's right on, it was kind of right on the borderline, right? Because they were underdogs, but only slightly. It was, a 1-point spread by the time, the game closed. And then, there was about 30 seconds left, which probably wasn't enough time to be really that worried about Daniel Jones driving down to kick a field goal in New York. As far as Houston, that was the right call, especially given how poor their defense is. That was the right call. You win the game. I'd rather put the game in the hands of Deshaun Watson than I would any of those players on the Houston defense.
Eric, I'm glad we can do this, and you said a few of those things. So I think you can clear some stuff up. There are a lot of people in media or just fans on Twitter. They think it's black and white, that it's a chart. And a few things that you just said right there explain like your viewpoint over at PFF. No, it isn't black and white. I have Watson on my side. I have a defense that can't stop any offense right now. It's more than just a chart, right?
100%. And that's why, we've talked before, you talk about totals. When you look at point spreads, right? Like the better play on Sunday was Houston moneyline, because in a game where neither defense can stop anybody, you're going to get fewer games that land on three, right? Like the game has to be a little bit more controlled for the game to land three. Whereas, again, the Giants-Washington game, the total on that game is 40, 43, something like that. And the game lands one, because, there's just not that spread there. And that's something to always take into consideration when you're betting, is that, like, these things are not the same. A 3-point spread in a game that's lined with a total 51, is way different than a 3-point spread when the game's total at 37.5. And they play out differently. And, in that game, if I'm Tampa Bay against, let's say, Chicago, I probably kick the extra point there and make Nick Foles score 8 points on me. But if I'm Houston against a Titans offense that's been one of the league's best for basically a year and a half, like, I kind of want to end it right there, and get out of Dodge with a victory.
Yeah, and my whole point would be, even just the math, right, Eric, would be with the Texans. You go for two, the game's over. You're up by 9. You don't get it, and you're up by 7. Well, then, at best, the Titans are still probably going to go down, get a touchdown, kick an extra point, and you go to overtime, which is 50-50.
Well, and not only that, but Gostkowski's been kind of a not an automatic PAT kicker. There's also the chance. I think if Tennessee's not favored in that game, they probably go for two with 4 seconds left to try to win the game. And that's not that's as not automatic as going for two when you're down 8. You know what I'm saying? So, there's a number of factors in there that I think make a lot of sense, for Credell's decision. And then the other thing, they're 1-4. I mean, like, what are they trying to preserve? You know, when you're 1-4, you go win the game, and if you lose, who cares? I mean, the marginal value of every loss is way less than the marginal value of every victory.
Not at the halfway mark, but we have a decent sample with 6 games so far in 2020. Are there any teams that stand out to you as paper tigers? Maybe teams that you are going to be looking to fade in the coming weeks?
I think the easiest one is probably Arizona. They've had a number of marquee wins. They won on opening day against San Francisco on the road in a game where I think it was a lot more about San Francisco than it was about Arizona. They just won a marquee game in Dallas in a game that I think is a lot more about Dallas than it is about Arizona. So they're sitting here 4-2, I believe. Home to Seattle. Fun fact, Seattle's last multiple score victory was actually in Arizona last year. So they've gone over a full calendar year without winning a game by multiple scores. And they're only 3.5-point favorites here. I kind of like Seattle, to lay it on Arizona a little bit. 140 of Kyler Murray's 188 passing yards on Monday night came on 2 plays. So they're a team that, like, it's really fun to see them good, because I think the league is better when Arizona is good. But at the same time, like, I think they're more on the path to being an elite team than a team that's like an automatic bet every week.
Eric, let's talk turkey. And by turkey, I mean Tua. Let's talk Tua. Your thoughts on the Dolphins' move now, and sort of what your data has said about how the Dolphins are playing, I guess, and what you think their chances would be to win the AFC East if they stuck with Fitz.
Yeah, we have the Dolphins with 38% chance to make the playoffs. I think they're a little bit lower than that to actually win the division. So they're a team in the hunt. You know, you look at the AFC, I think there's a pretty good chance that three teams out of the AFC North are going to make the playoffs. There are probably two teams out of the AFC East. And, you know, if the Raiders continue to pop up, that might be an option as well. And in the South, you have Indianapolis and Tennessee. So it's a pretty, like, tough road to make the playoffs out of that conference. But they have a good shot at it. I mean, we have them with, yeah, to win the divisions in 18%, to make the playoffs 38%. I like the move. Fitzpatrick's a great quarterback as far as in the room. He reminds me a lot of Alex Smith in that regard, where, you know, I think he's going to be an asset to Tua. And the problem is like, they're not a Super Bowl contender. We have about a 1% chance to win the Super Bowl. They're a team that's on the rise. And when you take a quarterback at fifth overall, you need to find out whether or not he's good. And if he's not, then you move on and you possibly draft one of these guys that's coming into the draft this year. And, you know, a couple good games from Ryan Fitzpatrick, I don't think changes that. And in fact, against the Jets, he led the NFL last week in turnover worthy plays. It was just that the Jets were so horrendous that they never made him pay for it. But I endorse the move. Tua was our clear second best quarterback. I thought the difference between him and Herbert was actually immense. So I think the Dolphins are in a really good spot here.
When you talked about Arizona being a paper tiger that stands out, I was expecting for you to mention Chicago in some sense. But we've got the Chicago Bears here. On yesterday's show, we were talking about, you know, they have the second best record in the NFL. It's wild how they got there. But through six games in the NFC, I should say, this is where we're at 13-1. Is there any value with them to win the NFC? But, we're coming off a week when the Seahawks have the bye. They're the only team still undefeated in that conference, and Tampa's looking really good after that win over Green Bay. Is there a team that stands out to you as the best in the NFC right now?
Yeah, we make Chicago a 7% chance to make the Super Bowl, so a little bit over 13-1. Not much, though, so I think that price is probably fair. Last week was a really upsetting week if you thought that you knew something about the NFC, right? Because Tampa Bay ended up, you know, after losing to Chicago, goes out and beats Green Bay and beats them handily. New Orleans, you know, with every passing week, I feel like I know less about New Orleans. And then they had a bye last week, so I wasn't able to learn anything there. For me, I think it's Seattle is kind of the front runner. We have them with a 14% chance to win the Super Bowl. And a lot of that just has to do with the fact that they've done well this season and last without much in the way of a defense. And you know, when you can do that, defense tends to regress. You think about Kansas City last year, through the season's first 9 or 10 weeks, they had allowed like 3 200-yard rushing games. They had struggled in the pass. They were basically, their defense was the reason they didn't make the Super Bowl the season prior. And then things come around, as defense does. When you get healthy, Jamal Adams gets healthy, as you know, things start to round into form, especially in an offseason with the pandemic. Defense oscillates, you know, week to week so drastically that if they catch a few good games of defense, their offense is more than good enough to start to be, you know, the best, you know, most well-rounded team in the league. So that's the game. That's weirdly, I feel like I'm buying Seattle even a little low right now, given, you know, all the narratives surrounding Tampa Bay, Green Bay, and some of those other teams.
How about NFC East, Eric? I will be there tomorrow night. Giants and the Eagles, I guess. Two-part question. The first one would be, is it really that bad? I mean, we see the records, but when you dive into the advanced metrics, the yards per play, those things, the opposite, is the division really that terrible? Historical?
Yes. The thing about, like, the hard part with the Eagles is so the Eagles have played two competitive games in a row here. Actually, three if you count the San Francisco game, but two competitive losses in a row here to two pretty good teams in Pittsburgh and Baltimore. But you actually dig into those games and there's a lot of noise. I mean, Wentz is still throwing turnover-worthy plays at a rate that is the highest in the NFL. You know, they're making a lot of 50-50 contested catches that don't always, you know, don't get caught in most games. Their defense can't cover the middle of the field to save their lives. And, you know, Doug Peterson, who I genuinely really like, is starting to make mistakes in basic strategy, you know, fourth down decisions, you know, they're going for the tie against Cincinnati, all that kind of stuff. That is a little troubling. So when I look at this division, like, you know, the Giants and Washington are bad. You know, Washington has, to the point now, I mean, they're, when Kyle Allen throws the ball, the average depth of target's like 5 yards. So they're just not simply too afraid to go down the field for the sake of turnovers. That I, you know, their defense is actually pretty good. But their offense, you know, I don't think can move the football. The Giants, you know, have a pretty good corner in James Bradbury. If Daniel Jones could come around, that's a decent formula. I just don't see it. And so then it comes down to Dallas, which, if your division being good comes down to Andy Dalton, Mike Nolan coach defense, and, you know, an offensive line that, you know, Ross, have they called you yet? Like, I feel like you're the next one up. Like, it's just a really bad look. So I think the division is as bad as the records are.
Eric, you talked about taking the Seahawks this week against Arizona. Do you have something else that stands out, a player or two, as your best bets for Week 7?
You know, as I look through it, I mean, I like the Giants tomorrow night. As I talked about Philly, you know, I know you're not getting the best of it anymore. With, you know, you could have had 6.5 early in the week. You know, right now Daniel Jones is playing better than Carson Wentz. So, you know, and they do have some weapons there with Tate and so on and so forth. So I don't mind the Giants tomorrow. I think the total is even maybe a little bit low. You're not protected with any teasers there, though, now that Philly is only -4. So, you know, I like that one a little bit. I don't know if I could go back to the well as you know, happily, you know, as you know, I want to here, but I also like Atlanta against Detroit. I think Detroit got a reprieve last weekend because Jacksonville's offense is so bad that, you know, they could, you know, basically do the whole rush three, cover with eight, and not get exploited there. Atlanta's offense, I think we saw its full potential last week against Minnesota. I don't think Detroit's defense is all that much better than Minnesota. You know, the Falcons are always a hold your nose and bet kind of type of team. But, you know, in this particular game, I think, you know, maybe they get on the right side here again, you know, and go to 2-5 then.
Very good. Eric Eager at @PFF_Eric on Twitter. Check out the PFF Forecast podcast. Eric, thanks for making time. Appreciate it. Great info as always.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Good luck this week.
Thanks, man. Eric Eager, getting you set for Week 7 in the NFL. Those are some ugly, ugly teams to back. But he does like Seattle. I feel like everybody's going to be on Seattle. Russell Wilson coming off a bye this week. Giants and the Falcons. But it wouldn't shock me if both of those come through.
If you like some of that stuff, I do. I love some of the NFL chatter, kind of figuring out where the Bears are amongst all the other teams in the NFC and all of the NFL. Make sure you check out Bet Sweats. That was from this morning, my daily sports betting show with NFL analyst Ross Tucker, live 9 to 11 a.m. on the freeradio.com app. And you can also subscribe to the podcast. It's really cool because we break it down. Here's an interview here. Here's an interview there. This section, we're talking about offensive rookie of the year. Here are some underdogs that we like for this week. So if you're into that stuff, make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your platform of choice. And you wake up here on Wednesday, and you're almost going to bed here on Wednesday, but we are literally 48 hours away from seeing Big Ten college football on our TVs. We'll talk about that next. I'm Joe Ostrowski on 670 The Score and the radio.com app.
You're listening to The Joe O Show on 670 The Score.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we've got Bears replay, Bears at the Panthers. Take the Bears in the under. This segment on The Score brought to you by Toro Snowblowers. For grizzly winters, you need a Toro Power Max snowblower. It's a beast on snow. Act now. Get up to $100 off on select Toro Power Max snowblowers. See your Toro retailer now. Win winter with a Toro. And all of a sudden, you see, yeah, college football's been going on in the ACC, SEC, Big 12, awaiting the launch of Big Ten football. Mountain West starts this week as well. Pac-12 around the corner, but yeah, Illinois is going to be in action Friday night against Wisconsin. I do love, Okay, they're trying this. That's cool. But I do love that we're going to have Friday night football every single week in the Big Ten. I think that's going to be a cool thing to look forward to, and it's going to help the conference out since they've been on the sideline as college football came back. Now, we're probably going to miss multiple games. There's going to be cancellations. On my show, Bet Sweats, today on radio.com, subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Bet Sweats. Have the opportunity to check in with ESPN's Adam Rittenberg. Does a terrific job. You see him on ESPN, SportsCenter with SVP all the time, talking Big Ten football and basketball. And before we got to a preview on Illinois, Wisconsin, we just talked about how we feel right now with Big Ten football back in our lives.
It was obviously a very long and drawn out process for the Big Ten. A lot of bad feelings after the initial postponement in August. And so, you know, that led to the reinstating of the season in mid to late September. And then, you know, it's kind of been full speed ahead for these teams, you know, with their new testing and trying to get as ready for the season as possible. And then now it's here. So it's going to be, interesting and fun, hopefully, for all these teams to get back on the field this weekend, beginning on Friday night with Illinois and Wisconsin.
We get the opener for the conference. The Badgers are favored by 19.5. How do you view this game?
Right. Well, I mean, we talked about Wisconsin and Graham Mertz, and this is probably as good a situation as any for him to start off. They're playing at home, you know, against an Illinois defense that, you know, Illinois created a lot of turnovers last year. And obviously any of us who followed, you know, Lovie Smith's career in the NFL, it's not a surprise his defenses did that, but they weren't a particularly sound defense. So I think Wisconsin, you know, should be able to score points and move the ball and get some confidence going on their side of the ball. And then, you know, Illinois, you know, Brandon Peters is back at quarterback. They have some playmakers on their offense. You know, Rod Smith is a really good play caller. He was on Rich Rodriguez's staff at Michigan for many years, and then in Arizona, other spots, West Virginia. So I think that the Illini offense, you know, could have some opportunities to score as well. We've seen, you know, scoring and offense is up pretty much throughout college football. And Wisconsin's always been one of the better defenses in the Big Ten, but you wonder if Illinois has an opportunity, you know, with the returning quarterback and some other playmakers to put up some points in this one. So I think Wisconsin wins the game. I don't know if they cover that number, but it's probably a good first spot for Graham Mertz before the schedule gets, you know, certainly tougher at Nebraska week two, Purdue, Michigan. Minnesota, obviously, on the schedule as well. Iowa at the end of the year. So it'll be very, very interesting to watch Mertz on Friday night.
What are they going to do when some of these games get canceled? Like, there is no wiggle room. There is no space to put an extra game there's no bye weeks to move it around. Like, if one of these Big Ten East or Big Ten West, are they just going to go by win percentage after that to see who goes to the Big Ten title game?
Yeah, so I mean, there'll just be no contest if they're not able to be played, and the Big Ten put out a list of tiebreakers, and, you know, ideally there is a head-to-head matchup between the two top teams in the division, but it could go, you know, down the list of winning percentage or victory against the next top team, and, you know, there's all sorts of tiebreakers here in the event that some of these games get canceled, because there is no postponing, there's just cancellations this year because the league is trying to go, you know, eight games in 8 weeks with a ninth game and, you know, throughout the league in the championship window.
Yeah, I mean, we're all excited about this weekend, but we see what's happening every week in college football in different portions of the country. They're postponing games, and they are able to make it up with a little wiggle room here, and we'll see if they can get 8 games. I think all of us understand that that's probably not going to happen right now. In your mind, as a big college football fan and this being your job, do you think there's any way of just being able to pull off a legitimate season, or it is what it is and they're going to do what they can?
Well, you know, again, the Big Ten structured its testing, which, you know, Scott Frost in Nebraska said recently was better than any testing that he'd seen out there, including maybe the NFL. The way the Big Ten is doing this is, yes, there will be positive tests. We know that there'll be positive tests, but by testing every day, they should be able to limit the number of impacted players. That's what's causing the cancellations or the postponements, and in some cases cancellations. It's not necessarily that there's 40 players who are testing positive for COVID, but it's 10 players who have been in contact with 30 more, and they're all in contact tracing, and they're wiped out for a couple of weeks. The Big Ten's testing is designed, if it's working correctly, to prevent large numbers of players from being put into contact tracing. So while a positive test means you're out for 3 weeks, ideally there won't be 20, 30 players that are out, and then these games can still happen every week. Now, if there's major, you know, large groups of games that are being postponed or being canceled, I should say, in the Big Ten, then you know that the testing plan hasn't worked. And maybe there was no chance for it to work to begin with, but I know that's why they did it the way they did it. And that's why they feel they have a chance to get almost all of these games in, even though we know some players will not be out there from a week-to-week basis.
ESPN's Adam Rittenberg with me this morning on Bet Sweat. Subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, radio.com. Please check it out. I think you'll enjoy what you hear. I want to thank Patrick Finley for jumping on the show tonight. Executive producer Mike Rankin. And coming up next, we debut Bears Replay. We're going to bring this to you every Wednesday at 8 o'clock on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, the most recent Bears game. So Bears Panthers is next. I will talk to you, I believe I'm on Friday with Lawrence Holmes at 1 o'clock. And also we've got early odds Saturday morning at 8 a.m., just like every single Saturday. And check me out on BetSweats. Follow me on Twitter at JoeO670. Enjoy Bears Panthers. I think it's you'll be happy with the result right here on 670 The Score. Good night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.